When we say the word peace, our minds recognize it first and foremost as the absence of war. Maybe you think of the Christmas truce of 1914, which actually really did happen on the battlefields of Belgium and France. Or maybe you think about the American peace movement in the face of the Vietnam War in the 1960s, like this last clip showed. Or maybe you've been longing for such a long time that the current strifes around the world, strife and contention in the Middle East, or in Africa, or in Southeast Asia, or surrounding the Sea of Japan, that those contentions and strife would cease. Peace is first and foremost the absence of war, but thankfully and amazingly, it's much, much more. And today we'll consider four key points about peace from the Bible, starting with the Old Testament word for peace, which is something that maybe many of you know, shalom. Shalom means the absence of war. Remember Solomon and David. David, God made him to be a man of war. He was fit for the times. His job was to establish the kingdom in a hostile context. But he was unfit to build the temple. Solomon, his son, God made him a man of peace. He was fit for his times. A golden age of quiet, calm, rest from neighboring enemies, a period of thriving, of peace. In fact, it was he who got the chance to build the temple. And in fact, his name, Solomon, means peace. Shlomo, shalom. Shlomo, Solomon, shalom, peace. His name means peace. So, first and foremost, the Bible tells us that peace involves the lack of strife or contention. Second, as an indication that it's much, much more, it's also used as a greeting. The word shalom, it's used as a greeting. We read not too long ago in Exodus 18 when Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came to visit Moses. It says they asked after each other's shalom. They asked after each other's welfare. And in fact, I understand that today in contemporary Israel today, that's how you greet someone. Mishlomcha. How is your peace? Isn't it interesting, though? We have a saying in New Zealand that's when we greet people, a lot of people at my work greet people. Have you ever heard people say, are you winning? Are you winning? It's kind of like saying, how's your war? But in the Old Testament, it was, how's your peace? How's your wholeness? Shalom, the word, was also a word associated with payments and contractual agreements. Elisha and the widow, remember the miracle with the oil, the multiplication of the oil? She got all the vessels. And then when all the vessels were finished, the oil stopped. And what did Elisha say to her? He said, go, sell the oil, and shalom your debt. Pay your debt. The word is shalom in the Old Testament. And in Exodus 21, when one person's ox gores another person's ox, then the first person shall surely shalom an ox for an ox. Do you get it? Shall surely repay an ox for an ox. The word shalom is much more than absence of war. It's also used to describe the recovery of loss. In Isaiah chapter 60, the days of your mourning shall be shalomed. The days of your mourning shall be ended, completed. Recovery of loss. And in Joel chapter 2, I will shalom the years that the eaten by the locusts. I will restore the years eaten by the locusts. Do you get the idea that it's a whole lot more than just the absence of war? And finally, I'd like to say that shalom in the Old Testament describes a state of fulfillment, which is the result of God's presence alone. And this is described very clearly in what we call the Aaronic blessing. It's Numbers chapter 6, verses 24 to 26. It's Yahweh God is instructing Moses to tell Aaron, his brother, how to bless the Israelite people. And he uses these words. This is from God, an instruction from God. And they're words that contain blessing, keeping or protection, grace, favor, light, warmth, care, focused attention, and affection. And the last word in this prayer is, caps it all off, shalom. I'll say it for you. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his face upon you and give you peace. So the first thing we're talking about in the Bible, in the Old Testament, peace is a whole lot more than the absence of war. It's wholeness, inner stillness, quietness, rest, tranquility, completeness, soundness, resolution of problems, fulfillment of obligations, safety, welfare, contentment, harmony, and that great word, thriving. Thriving. And lastly, shalom, peace. The source of shalom is God himself. That's the Bible's teaching. So one, it's more than the absence of war. Two, real peace is reconciliation, brought about solely by the sacrificial death of God in person, Jesus of Nazareth. The New Testament takes the idea of shalom from the Old Testament and expands it by strongly linking it to the word reconcile, reconciliation. A three-level reconciliation, in fact, between people and God, people and each other, and people and the environment. You see, in the beginning, it was all very good, all very good. There was harmony between people, God and people, between people and people, and between people and the environment. When God finally created on the sixth day the people, he said, this is very good. Shalom between people and God. And then between people and people, when Eve comes along, Adam says, at last, this is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. There was peace between people and between people and the environment. Adam's task was to look after the garden. He needed someone to till it, the Bible says. And also, he had the privilege of naming the animals when they came along. So there was harmony between God and people, people and people, and people and the environment. But when Adam and Eve sinned for that very first time, all of that relational harmony was shattered. They hid from God. They hid from each other, and from now on, it would take hard work to get food out of the ground. All those three levels of peace was broken by sin. The peace of God has and had been and has been, even today, broken by sin. But fortunately, God had another plan. A plan to restore peace, all three of those levels of peace, of relationship, to restore the peace, a plan for reconciliation, a plan that involved God's becoming a human being himself, living a life which brought God's personal presence to the earth, and dying an undeserved death to pay the price for our wrongdoings. Jesus came to earth as God in person, to restore the peace. The peace between people and God. Listen to Romans chapter 5. God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to him through the death of his Son. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 says, God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. So the peace, level one, peace between people and God. Level two, peace between people and people. For he, Ephesians chapter 2, for he himself is our peace, who has made the two groups into one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, thus making peace and in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross. He came and preached peace to you who are far away and peace to you who are near. Reconciliation between people and people brought about by the death of Jesus Christ. Third level, peace between people and the physical world or the environment. Colossians says, for God was pleased to reconcile, hear that word, reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Peace between people and the environment. Romans chapter 8, for the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Three-level peace restored by the death of Jesus Christ on the cross. First, peace is far more than the absence of war. Second, peace is reconciliation. Three-level relational wholeness made possible through the sacrificial death of Jesus Christ. And third, peace is active, not passive. There's a few things that peace is not. Peace is not simply what's left over when war is finished. That's not peace. That's just a horrific mess. Peace is not a ceasefire. Peace is not trying to be mellow, trying not to fight, hanging around in a John the Baptist onesie singing songs. Good attempt, but that's not what peace is. Peace is not trying to avoid disagreement. Peace is not trying to pretend that there are no issues. Peace is not trotting out platitudes that don't really help and otherwise trying to paper over the cracks. That's not peace. Peace is far more active and concrete and courageous. For Jesus, it required courage and action. Namely, it took courage to face our sin and the suffering and death that he went through. It took courage and action for Jesus. And for us, it will be similar. It is not passive. For us, it will require courage and action. One, to seek peace with God. If you've never reached out and taken hold of what Jesus offers you from the cross, the forgiveness of sins, the freedom from guilt, a clean conscience, a new life that will never come to an end, then if you haven't reached out and taken hold of those things, then today is the day to do it. If you've not done that and want to do it, you come to the front down here on the last song after the service and we will help you. Seek peace with God takes courage and action. In fact, when you're doing this, you might think, I can't, it's too scary. Everyone will look at me. I'll tell you what, when I did this, when I became a Christian, I had cramps in my legs. Everything in my body was saying, do not do that. They'll think you're a fraud because you've been coming to church for so long. But bless God, I didn't listen to that. And I went up the front with my cramps. It takes courage to seek peace with God. Second, seek peace. It takes action and courage to seek peace with others. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. If it is possible, as far as it depends upon you, live at peace with everyone. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. Costly, costly movement toward one another. It takes courage and action to seek peace with each other. Don't just avoid conflict. Seek to be reconciled. There's a world of difference between those two things. Don't just avoid conflict. Be reconciled. It's active and it takes courage. Third, seek peace with the environment. Let us return to God's original intention, to look after things, the material world that we live in, to tend the land, to look after it, to care for animals, to nurture and enjoy the plant life. There's a chap at my work who's in charge of the native plant nursery at the Manawatu District Council. They grow all sorts of native plants, and his philosophy is healthy soil, healthy food, healthy life. Shalom. Let us stop boomerang buying. Buy for fashion, okay, but also buy for durability. Reuse stuff. From shoes to garden to kitchen scraps. Reuse stuff. I have a cousin who has done a lot of sailing on ships, big cargo ships. And he came to New Zealand and landed in Wellington on this great big teaching ship. And we went around it with him, and he showed us a weather buoy. And I said, "What's this?" He says, "We, on this trip down south, we've been asked to deposit these at various places in the Pacific Ocean." I said, and it sends back signals giving the weather at that place and time to somewhere. It's telemetry. And I said, "That's cool. Is there a battery in them?" He said, "Yeah, it only lasts for so long." I said, "Well, who comes and collects them?" Guess what? Nobody. He said to me, "Jim, you would be astonished at how much trash is in that big, what we think is a big wide ocean out there." So let's do something about that. It's peace, reconciliation, relational wholeness with the material environment. So where we're at, four things about peace in the Bible. Peace is far more than just the absence of war. Second, peace is ultimately relational wholeness brought about by the sacrificial death of God in person, Jesus Christ. Third, peace is active. It's not passive. And fourth, and quite simply, peace starts today. Right here, these very seats, this very building, is a perfect place to start reconciliation. On those three levels, I had a friend in Gisborne. He was a pastor, and he used to take funerals, as pastors sometimes do. He always, whether it was a Christian funeral or was a non-Christian funeral, he always said this: "Today, people, is a time to keep short accounts. Whether you know God or you don't know God, it's a day to keep short accounts, and to keep short accounts with God, and to keep short accounts with one another. I don't care if you believe in God. To keep short accounts." And I want to say to you today about peace. Peace starts today. It's today is a day to keep short accounts with one another, with God, with the environment. I want to offer a few minutes of silent reflection now as I finish this message. And then after that period, I'll ask the singers to lead us in the last song. But I want you to think about three things in this period of silence. One, is God knocking at the door of your heart? Do you need to open up to him and let him in? 2, do you need to be reconciled with another person? Remember, it's not just avoiding conflict. Do you need to be reconciled with another person? If so, then how would you approach them? What will you say? Does it actually need words at all? Would some sort of action do? On the other hand, if you're a person who's being approached by someone seeking reconciliation, how will you know? What will you say? What will you do to respond? And third, what about your relationship with the physical world we live in? Do you need to do something to return to caring for it? Let's have a few minutes of silent reflection on those now.